on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate live in Atlanta, Georgia, at the College Football Hall of Fame site of this year's SEC Media Days. We are in day three of four here at SEC Media Days. And for those of you that are paying attention, for those of you that have asked, we will be live next week in Charlotte, North Carolina, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for the ACC Media Days. Looking forward to getting back to Charlotte this year to cover the Atlantic Coast Conference. But these 4 days, all about the Southeastern Conference and, of course, all about the Gamecocks of South Carolina. Speaking of the Gamecocks, yesterday got the opportunity to sit down with the SEC Network's, not yet, Peter Burns, got a chance to sit down yesterday with Peter Burns of the SEC Network and spend a few minutes with him. Love Peter, man, just good people, good dude. I had the pleasure, the privilege, a number of years ago of meeting Peter Burns, and at the time, Peter Burns was a sports talk show host down in San Antonio, Texas. And I got the opportunity to meet Peter Burns last year. Scratch that. Got the opportunity to meet Peter Burns a number of years ago. And when I got the chance to meet Peter, we had some great conversation at an Army-Navy game back in the day. Yesterday, I put in for and got scheduled for a number of SEC Network personalities. In fact, later on today, we'll be interviewing former NFL tight end Benjamin Watson, now with the SEC Network. Very much looking forward to that. He was one of my favorite players as both a player and a New Orleans Saint. We'll sit down with him. Peter was one of the personalities that were confirmed. About halfway through the day yesterday, a young lady from the SEC Net came over and she said, "Look, we got a little wonky on the time. We may not be able to get you Peter today. Is it okay if we get him to you tomorrow or the day after that?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "It's not a guarantee. We're going to try to work you back in." But I, you know, she was very apologetic. They were very kind. And again, I understand the SEC Network is, I think they're doing like 50 hours of live programming, and Peter is a big part of that. So between being on every show throughout the day, he's trying to hit as many radio stations as he can. It just happens at events like this. So we were getting towards the end of the day, and she came over. She said, "We may not be able to get him to you. I'll try. Great, no worries." Well, a minute or two later, Peter was walking by, and he stopped, and he said, "Rob Brown." And I said, "Yeah, man, great to meet you." And he said, "When's the last time I saw you? Had to be 14 years ago." "Yeah." He said, "I still follow you on Twitter. I still see your takes. I still see your videos. You're doing great work." I said, "Thank you very much." And he looked at the young lady that was acting as handler in that moment for him, and he said, "Make sure you find some time for this guy. I want to sit down." And she said, "Done." So yesterday, late afternoon, towards the end of the day, around 6 o'clock or so, they came back over. I usually try to get out of here. I guess it was about 5:30. I've been trying to get out of here. Usually everything's wrapped up around 5:30. I've been going back to the hotel room to cut up audio and all that. Fortunately, I stuck around a little bit later yesterday, knowing that I was going back to meet a buddy and go to Magic City and go to a bar to watch the All-Star game. I was like, all right, no rush. I just need enough time to drop off the bag. So Peter comes back and says, "Make sure we get some time." And she said, "I got you." So Peter Burns sat down with us yesterday to talk a little football, and I would like to share that with you now if I can figure out how to properly do so. In fact, let me unmute. I think I gotta unmute the site. I may actually have to run this through a different format, Lonzo. In fact, I think I'm going to, because what I thought was gonna work playing it over StreamYard may not. Did you hear that a second ago when I started that?
I did not, but I should be able to play it from StreamYard technically.
Okay, let's try that. Let's see if we can get Peter Burns running here. If we can't hear, I'll put it into another format, and we will figure it out. But here is my conversation yesterday. Let me know if it works. Great one. From the SEC Network's Peter Burns. Nah, it looks like it. Well, whatever that is, ain't it.
It was a lot of fun, though.
It was, you know, sometimes you just got to experiment. All right, let me see if this method will work. Great one. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. This is the Fan Upstate, and I am actually really stoked to have our next guest on, because while the interactions have been few and far between since then, I had the pleasure of meeting this young man, and I say young lovingly, because
that's when it's been a long time ago.
It's been a long time. about a dozen plus years ago, I got the opportunity to meet Peter Burns, now with the SEC Network, at a USAA Army Navy game.
Yeah,
I believe that one was in Washington, D.C.
I think it was, yeah. And that was back when I was doing sports talk radio in San Antonio. And then I think I came back and did the Army Navy game with them another year in Philly when I was in Denver.
Yep, but I was there with you in that one.
The fact that we get all the way back here in SEC Media Days. And by the way, I just made my first trip to Greenville, South Carolina last year. I know I feel bad because our studios are right there in Charlotte.
Yep.
I was freaking blown away.
Isn't it the best?
Well, because we've always heard about it for SEC Women's Basketball Tournament, but I always work in the men's tournament over in Nashville. And so I was like, all right, finally, I'm going to go. Went down there with a friend, and I was like, I got to come back. And it's so easy from Charlotte, so I'm all in. I'm Team Greenville now.
And now you got a guy that knows the dive bars in Greenville, so holler at your boy, and we'll make it happen.
I'm in. As long as you know where the tabs are, where they're going, we're fine with that.
Hey, I'm sorry. You're on the SEC Network, buddy. I thought we were rolling with you. Peter Burns from the SEC Network here on the Rob Brown Show. How's life, partner? I know that this is a crazy week for you guys, but how's everything?
It's fun because it's kind of the unofficial, like, all right, get your mind right
week. Sure.
And this is a different year than we've ever had. I say this is the first time Media Days has felt kind of the normal since we had like 2019.
Yeah,
because conference expansion, no one's talking about that right now. Texas and Oklahoma have already done a year here. The NIL thing is kind of chilled out a little bit because of the collectives, and now teams are hiring GMs. So this is the first time, and I think in a long time, that we're actually talking about football on the field. And so now, with that being said, that's one of my lines this week, is like, We still don't know who the players are, really. And I think a lot of the coaches at this point really know what their team is. They have a general idea, and that's what we try to figure out this week through the interviews and through our interactions.
It has been interesting, and not to go down the transfer portal path, because you're right. My producer and I, Lonzo, we've been saying for a hot minute now, today's the first day of football season. I guess yesterday, but this week's the first week of football. But there is this interesting thing we're discovering is we're talking to Shane Bieber and Kirby Smart, and we're talking to the guys that are playing defense. We had DQ Smith from South Carolina on.
That guy is huge, by the
way. That dude's a man. Oh. Definition. He said that one of the interesting things that's happening for defensive like him and Nick Barrett is they're not just having to learn to ingratiate incoming high schoolers in there to learn college ball, but they're bringing guys from Florida State and Nebraska and these other schools that have a different college culture ingrained in them and trying to get them adapted into, especially when you have a school like South Carolina that's very culture-oriented around Shane Beamer. That's kind of created this whole new dynamic these guys are having to address.
But that's why Shane has thrived in this environment where other coaches don't. Like, I think Shane, to his credit, is as good as anybody of just being like, hey, I'm just a real dude. And he has real dudes around him. And I remember vividly when Shane first took the job, and I've known him back for, a long time now. And I remember asking him, I was like, so what's your goal? Like, how do you do this? Like, at South Carolina, it's not Alabama or it's not Ohio State or Texas or, you know, the brand name. So how do you do it? And he goes, here's the deal. He goes, I was just working for Kirby. And I remember vividly he says, hey, I may not be able to get every five-star, but I guarantee you there's a bunch of three- and four-star guys that with the right coaching that we can develop. And he goes, I'm gonna grab the best coaches that I can create more of a community around and than ever before. And I think that we saw that with Nick Saban at Alabama. He was great, but he burned out his coaches. You say the same thing about Kirby. Now, Kirby has a lot of his boys on his roster, but Kirby works them to the bone. And I think for Shane's like, if you want a good balance of life, college football, and I think that's why last year was so successful, because when he goes in the transfer portal, he's not just taking anybody. He's taking the guys that fit. Even if they're a two- or three-star guy, there's a plan because this guy fits the culture of South Carolina football And all of a sudden, he finds a way to make it work, and that's why you see the season they had last year.
I'll tell you one of the things, just to get your reaction to it, that's really bothered me a lot from college football fans the last couple of years is there's this attitude that, oh, these players are just going to go to whoever strokes the biggest check or gives them the most NIL or the most rev share. And I'm not saying there are no dudes that is true about, but I also think when you look at a lot of these teams in this conference, and I absolutely put South Carolina kind of at the forefront of this, you'll see there's a lot of dudes who want to be, they want to get paid. So do we all, right? But there's a lot of dudes that they want to be in the right place for them, whether it's as a man, as a student, as a football player. And I do think that Shane Beamer has done that. Do you think that that is enough to one day elevate South Carolina into that Georgia, Alabama top tier?
Yeah, I mean, because I don't know there's ever going to be a thing as a top tier any longer. I think now, obviously, with the salary, quote-unquote salary cap,
sure,
everything's going to be fairly equal. But, I mean, this is enough of a proven program that you could take a look at and that you can still have a lot of collective money. But what you have to do is you have to show that you can get there and over and over and over again. And again, as long as those fans are showing up at Williams-Brice in the way that they do and you have that, you cannot think and you go out there to 5 points and you're just like, this is where I want to be. And so that's why, and I'll be honest with you, you cheer for the good guys in our sport. And I don't know if there's anybody that when you hang around, you'll see on the Netflix series that they'll release that first episode, there's a great scene of Lenore Seller and his family talking about this is the best place that he could have gone. Think about all the places he could have gone. And he chose to go play for Shane Beamer. That's awesome.
Speaking of Lenore, this is a really interesting year for quarterbacks in this conference because you've got Gunnar Stockton in the story at Georgia, Arch Manning and all the drama around him at Texas. You've got all these great quarterbacks, and Lenore kind of feels like he's in that group. I was watching this kid walk around Monday. He looks like a rock star with just a gaggle of groupies following him. Mm-hmm. What is a realistic to you ceiling and floor expectation for Lenore Sellers this year?
I think it's tough to say Heisman Trophy guy, but I mean, you're talking about a first team, maybe second team all SEC dude, right? You know, that puts up the numbers. I mean, the thing is staying healthy. That's one of the reasons why he was a late commit to South Carolina, is because, hey, he has to make sure that he stays healthy. We saw what happened in the LSU game where they didn't have him. So I sky is the limit for him, but he's just a good kid. Another one of those guys, Rob, that we just pull for here in this conference top to bottom.
Without a doubt. Do you think, I've said a couple of times, as go Lenoris, goes the Gamecocks, because he's just one of those special players. Is this a team that can threaten, not go to, not win, threaten an SEC title game appearance this year?
I'm going to say...
You're not hurting any feelings here, Peter.
No. I think that the ceiling for this team right now is a 10-2. I'd say the floor of it is 6-6. I think it ultimately ends up being an 8-4 squad.
Is that good enough for the expectations around Shane Beamer, considering what they accomplished last year?
I think because you had so much talent last year, you're just like, all right, now if we've elevated this program to where the floor is going to be 8-4, that is fantastic news. And so that's why I'm trying to, you know, figure out what Shane's got this season. And he's not backing down from it. And I think he's got a chip on his shoulder. We weren't talking about South Carolina last year, and then sure enough, look at what happened.
Peter Burns from the SEC Network, kind enough to take a few minutes here on the Rob Brown Show. Now that you're a little more familiar with the GVL, brother, you got to come down. We'll show you around.
I know we got the dive bars. I'm ready to go, Rob.
We got the dive bars. Listen, I'm just saying, tell the boys you want to shift over to the women's tournament. It is electric.
I'm telling you. I'm like Alyssa Lang and me, we'll do it next year.
Done and
seriously.
Done. We got to get you back on the show.
Love it.
Peter Burns from the SEC Network here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate.
So there you go. Our conversation yesterday with the SEC Network's Peter Burns. Any takeaways from that for you, Lonzo, that jumped off the page at you?
Yeah, he did a thing that a lot of media won't do, and he said we got to wait to see what they have as far as players go. You know, there's so much hype, but this team is going to be this. This is going to be this. But in the end, they're not at training camp yet. So we don't know really what they have. And as he pointed out, the coaches do to a degree, but the media does not. And I thought that was very honest, and a lot of media members won't do that. They're too much into the hype, which they're supposed to be, especially if they're for a certain school. And I thought that was kind of cool.
I completely concur. In fact, I gave him credit for that after we were done, and have said it a couple times. As a matter of fact, yesterday I bumped into Josh Pate of CBS Sports, and I told him the same thing. I said, I got to tell you, like, I appreciate that there are now not just a growing number of shows, but a growing number of talking heads in the sports media landscape that are willing to say, look, I think this, I think that. It is possible that. This is a possible outcome. Here's a ceiling. Here's a floor. But aren't going to say, oh, this, you know, this championship or bust. It's this or that. It's got to be this or it's got. I like that there are a lot of nuanced takes, and I genuinely believe that Peter Burns is at the top of the game in terms of that, in terms of being intellectual about the takes, about being open about we don't know yet. And I will say, and I don't think that this is unfair, I don't think it's a slight because it could be positive or negative, but I genuinely think in the Southeastern Conference there are two or three teams that I think are question marks that we aren't going to know until it happens. I think the Florida Gators with DJ Lagway is in that group. We're going to be hearing from Billy Napier and DJ Lagway later on in SEC Media Days today. I think Florida is absolutely in that group. I don't know what this team is going to be yet. I don't know if Lagway is a Heisman contender, or I don't know if he's a guy that just had a good run at the end of last year and is going to come in a little bit overhyped this year. I think Texas A&M is in that group. Mike Elko, you're number two. David Nuno, who we're going to hear from coming up here in just a little while, he loves what Elko is doing, and he loves what these Aggies are right now. I don't know what they are, though, and I don't think we're going to know until we get on the field. I think it is fair to say, and it may be because of Lenora Sellers, great one, I don't think it's unfair to say the South Carolina Gamecocks might be the biggest question mark, because I do think that with Lenora Sellers, if he turns into what we all hope he turns into, I think they may have the highest ceiling of any of the teams that have a question mark. If Lenora's is indeed a Heisman Trophy finalist, as a lot of us are hopeful that he will be, I think that they genuinely could be not just a playoff threat, but they could be a team that backdoors their way in, shocks everybody, and makes it to Atlanta to end the season. On the flip side, I think Peter Burns is right. I think they could be a 6-6 team. If things fall apart, if the talent's not there, if they're way too caught up in culture and hype and don't execute well, it is absolutely possible that they are a 500 team fighting for bowl eligibility. I think they might be the biggest question mark in the Southeastern Conference, because with an elite caliber quarterback, if Lenoris is that, I think they can compete with anybody. Maybe not everybody week in, week out, but I think they can, on any individual Saturday, compete with everybody. But if Lenoris ain't it, and he can't elevate the guys around him, which is a concern that David Nuno expressed yesterday, we'll hear from David here in a few minutes, if he does not reach that level and elevate guys around him, they could be in a world of hurt and take a step back from last year, which would be problematic. We'll talk more about that coming up a little bit later on in the show. We will hear from David Nuno of TexAgs.com, one of my favorite SEC talking heads. He's been covering the game for 20-plus years. At the end, the last segment of this hour, when we come back here in a minute, plenty more football stories to talk about on the Rob Brown Show, live from the College Football Hall of Fame and SEC Media Days here on the Fan Upstate. Brown Show back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you. Want you to be a part of the radio broadcast today. 844-326-3663. 844-FANFONE. I have asked twice so far this week, and your answers are still welcome. We will take them throughout the rest of the show today. I do have coming up later this morning, we are going to be joined by Elijah Campbell, who covers the Gamecocks for 107.5 The Game in Columbia, South Carolina. He is here as well. We're going to talk a little Gamecock football with Elijah Campbell coming up in the next hour of the show. But you guys, once you on the Hub City Spartanburger text line, 844-326-3663. The answer I'm looking for from Gamecock fans is this. On Monday, South Carolina Day, early in the morning, Shane Beamer was on the SEC Network with Paul Feinbaum. And Paul, being the wordsmith that he is, effectively said to Shane, without directly saying to Shane, South Carolina cannot win the SEC. So what can you do? And Shane Beamer responded by saying, we have everything on this roster
that we need to do everything we want to do. But he ended it there. He did not add anything to that. He did not say what we want to do. He did not say what it is. And so I've asked Gamecock fans, since Shane did not say what it is, I've asked Gamecock fans, what is it to you? What is the mark? What is the bar? What is the minimum that you would say successful season? Is it 9-3 like it was? Is it 10-2? Is it 11-1? Is it an SEC championship game appearance? Is it make the playoffs? Is it make the playoffs and win a game? Is it make the playoffs and win two games? Is it intangible? Is it a, I want to end the year and be able to say that we were this, or I saw this, or it was this growth, or it was a fall off in this negative aspect? What is it that you would say Shane Beamer can say they were successful? And I asked you guys to text the radio broadcast with your answers, and I've gotten a handful of them that we have read so far on the show. And I got a couple more that I would like to give to you, and then our buddy Joey B has chimed in on the live stream, which you can watch the live stream as well by going to facebook.com/thefanupstate, the Fan Upstate on YouTube, the Fan Upstate on Twitter, or the Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, or on Twitch. I have asked you guys the last couple of days to give us your thoughts, and I've been collecting, whether it is via email, Twitter, or the text line, I have been collecting your responses. Here are a few of them. I'm going to give you a couple, and then Lonzo and I are going to react to them. I'll read you two that we already reacted to back in hour number one. You can go back and listen to that hour on demand when the show is over at thefanupstate.com. Go to the podcast section at the top of the page. Drop it down to the Rob Brown Show, and you can listen to each individual hour or download the entire show in its entirety, edited for time, and listen at your leisure. Trey from Simpsonville texted the show. He said, Rob, if we can hit 9-3 this year and stay competitive in every SEC game, I'll call it a success. We've been rebuilding the foundation for a few seasons now. This needs to be the year we can turn the corner. Cassie in Traveler's Rest texted the show. She said, I'm not expecting us to win the SEC, but if we're not in the conversation in November, that's a disappointment. Beamer's got the talent now. Let's go 10-2 and make some noise. Mike D in Greer sent us a message earlier this week. He said, Rob, all I want is progress. Show me we're closing the gap on Texas and Georgia. Give me a strong 9-3 and a bowl win, and I'm on board. Big Shane from Fountain Inn said, Rob, it's time to stop hoping and start expecting. 11-1 is the ceiling, but I'm holding out for 10 wins and a real shot at an SEC championship appearance. No more moral victories. I'm honestly good with that. Honestly, I'm good with that. The concept of no more moral victories. Now, I do want to say, I don't think last year's 9-3 was a moral victory. I don't think last year missing the SEC championship game by effectively one game, especially when you lost the Alabama game the way you lost it because you stepped on your own foot, especially because you lost the LSU game because, yeah, I'm at this point just willing to be that guy because you had it ripped away from you by some poor officiating down the stretch. You missed by one. I don't think that's a moral victory. I think those were victories. As Peter Burns pointed out in that interview we played for you last segment, nobody was talking about the Gamecocks going into the season last year, and everybody was talking about them down the stretch. That's not a moral victory. That's actual victory. But I am willing to say that the same result this year might be a moral victory. The expectations are higher, but the quarterback is elevated. You lost some talent like Nick Emanuori on the defensive side of the ball, but as we talked to DQ Smith, this is a very veteran group. This is a team that has been in the trenches. So I think no more moral victories is a fine take. I think it is obviously subjective what that means, but I think it's still fair as a sentiment. Let me give you a couple of more responses we have collected over the past couple of days. We'll give you our reactions. I got David Nuno of TexAgs.com in the next segment. LaToya in Anderson tweeted, she said, look, Rob, I bleed Garnet and Black, but I'm also realistic. If we finish 9-3 and our only losses are top 10 teams, I'll take it. Just keep recruiting and trending up. Great one. I honestly think that might be my favorite response that we have gotten so far. I bleed Garnet and Black, but I'm realistic. If we finish 9-3 and our only losses are top 10 teams, I'll take it. Just keep recruiting and trending up. I think that might be my favorite response we've gotten so far.
It's a very grounded and realistic take, but at the same time, at what point do you take that next step? If not this year, then when? If you're consistently doing all those things that you need to do to take the next step, when you're lifting your foot up, why not this year?
I don't think it's unfair, and that is why I think the caveat of if our only losses are to top 10 teams. Listen, at some point you got to start beating top 10 teams because the only way to be a top 10 team is to beat the top 10 teams. I think at some point you've got to expect victories in that spot. I just also think it is not necessarily unfair to say we're not there yet. We're trending towards it. Maybe in week 5, 6, 7, Lenoris is balling out of his mind. He's a Heisman front runner, and we go, okay, now I expect it. But I also wouldn't be shocked if at the end of the year we go, okay, next year it's got to be the year. Cody from Malden texted the show and said, if the Gamecocks can finally put together four solid quarters every Saturday, 10-2 isn't crazy, but I will settle for 9-3 as long as we don't lay any eggs, end quote.
Yeah, there were a couple quarters last year where you're like, what is going on?
Yep.
It's just like
Alabama, you lost that game because of one of them.
Yeah, everything, it's like they lost all of what they were doing, and it was unusual, but unfortunately it happened. I mean, if they figure out why they did what they did and don't do that this year, I mean, you're solving a lot of problems.
I don't disagree. Big H, we got two bigs. Now we got Big Dave and now we got Big H. Big H in Powdersville texted and said, I'm just tired of being a next year's our year program. 2025 needs to be our year. I want us in Atlanta. No more excuses. SEC championship game or bust.
There you Oof. Go. There you Oof. Go. And that goes along with what I'm saying. If you're constantly saying, you know, we're almost there to take the next step, you got to take the next step. This needs to be the year. You need to be in there. You were almost in the playoff last year. Build on that. I mean, I want to see them play for an SEC championship. And it's a possibility. It really is.
It's a possibility. Again, I think it would be – I think you would need a lot of help. I think you'd almost maybe need to backdoor your way in, but I also don't think it's unfair to say it's a possibility. Let me quickly fly through two or three more, then we're going to take a break. David Nuno of TexAgs.com coming up next. Nate texted the show, said, I'm not asking for a natty, Rob. I just want to see us in the 12-team playoff. If we're sitting at 10-2 and ranked top 10 in December, that's a win for me. Brian in Easley said, you want my honest expectation? 9 wins, competitive losses, no blow. Outs, and for the love of Spurrier, beat Clemson. That's my bar. And then T from Greenwood said, I don't care about the exact record, Rob. Just show me discipline, swagger, and development. If we're clearly better in November than September, I'll be happy to ride with Beamer for another few years. So there's some of the responses we've gotten. You can send your response. What do you like? What do you hate? Who of those texters got it right and wrong? 844-326-3663 is the Hub City Spartanburger text line. David Nuno of TexAgs.com sat down with me yesterday. We talked Aggies. We talked Gamecocks. You'll hear that conversation next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown Show here on the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great Alonzo back in Greenville, South Carolina. Manning the fort, holding it all down. Yesterday, actually, you know what, let me do this. We got a couple of comments on our live stream, facebook.com/thefanupstate, the Fan Upstate on YouTube, the Fan Upstate on Twitter. You can also find the Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. A couple of comments that have come in so far is I have asked, like,
talk to me about South Carolina. Shane wouldn't tell us what the goals are, just that they have the talent to meet them. So I asked Carolina fans. Joey B. is in the chat. He said Sellers is getting the hype because he's one of the few known quantities in the SEC this season. Stockton, Manning, Lagway, all elite prospects, but largely unproven. Most of the elite teams in the SEC this season are betting on unproven quarterbacks more than I can ever remember in one season. Bama, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas, and OU all truly don't know what they have at QB, and I think that's fair. I will say one of the things that I've had a lot of conversations with, and we'll bring this back up in the final hour of the show here in about 30 minutes from now. One of the conversations recurring conversations I've had is a lot of people saying Lenore Sellers has absolutely got the dog in him to be great, but we don't know if he will be or not. It was last year enough to establish him as dominance. T Swizzle says might not have another Sellers for a decade. Dudes like that only come around so much. That is why I've said a couple of times, T Swizzle, I think this guy has it in him to be South Carolina's Cam Newton. Like that guy you talk about for decades after he leaves the university. Will he turn into that? I don't know. We'll find out. Here's what I do know. What I do know is that yesterday I got the opportunity to sit down and talk to David Nuno, the director of broadcasting for TexAgs.com. They are the rival site of the Texas Aggies. I got the chance to talk to David Nuno yesterday a little bit about his expectations about Texas A&M, a little bit about his thoughts on the Gamecocks, because I pointed out to David that I genuinely do think that the Aggies and the Gamecocks have a lot in common. One's a cult, one's not. But outside of that, they genuinely feel like two young head coaches, not young, two newer head coaches, even though we are in Shane's, what, fifth year now. We are talking about Mike Elko in year two, but they are both culture-building coaches trying to rebuild the culture of an institution that believes that they deserve to be towards the top of the list. I'm going to come back to the first half of the Nuno interview later where I told him that I think the Aggies are a cult and got his response to that, because I wanted, while we're talking Gamecocks, to get David Nuno's thoughts to you on where these two teams are, how they compare, and what he feels is true about Lenore Sellers and the Gamecocks of South Carolina.
Dude, those same vibes I took away from his last year at Duke when he got to A&M, and I did say, because while I will tell all the lame, cold jokes, I'll give credit when credit is due. I really like the football passion there. I really like the culture, and I think Elko doesn't just fit A&M, but it feels like A&M kind of fits Elko, sure. And sometimes we get lost. We always say the coach fits the culture. I think it's got to be a two-way street, and I think it is. But let's go back and talk about this team, because I do think there is, to some degree, a parallel between Texas A&M and South Carolina, two teams that have a fan base that, if we're keeping it a buck, both believe they should be better where they are, achieving more than they achieve. Both of them have a coach that is new, maybe not young, but new and learning and instituting, et cetera, et cetera. And both of them are really kind of relying on the very unique culture and vibes around their program to elevate that, to get the right guys in the job. So I do look at two programs, and I'll ask if there is a miss on anything I'm saying between these two schools, but I look at two schools that are very similar in that they're building coaches with building cultures with relatively new coaches. Obviously, Beamer at South Carolina slightly longer, and it is right now about finding maybe not the talent that's getting picked up by Ohio State and Georgia, but it's about finding those 3- and 4-star guys that fit what you want there. And I feel like A&M and South Carolina are two programs that are both trending upwards, when some of the other programs, Alabama, that have been LSU, yep, historically at the top, are maybe stalled out a little.
I'll disagree in this respect. Getting talent in A&M is not a problem.
Sure.
Jimbo got number one classes. Right now, Elko's got, if not the number one, the number two or three class in the country going in for 2026. I think the resources that A&M has, there's very few schools in the country that have the resources. Now, those pockets are spent still paying Jimbo off, right?
Sure.
But that being said, I agree with you that it takes a special type of athlete to play not only for that type of head coach, but that type of community and culture, right? And in a world of NIL, where every school is spending some money, every school in the SEC and the Big Four level, right? You better get the right guy.
Yeah.
And you better get the right guy that is there for the right reasons. He might be the right guy short term, but is he the right guy for the players around him? Is he going to lead? And I think that is what A&M is trying to do. South Carolina, on the other side, I mean, excuse me for not remembering, did anybody know that Lenore Sellers was going to be Lenore Sellers? Right?
We were hyped for him coming out of West Florence in South Carolina, but that is only because in South Carolina we'd seen the kid play high school ball.
But did you think this?
I didn't think this. I said, yeah, I think I said this on your show yesterday. This kid, I am not saying will. I'm saying can do everything Cam Newton did.
Yep. I struggle with that. Even though he played better than Cam Newton against A&M this past year, he was amazing. I have to see more. I think he is easily 1A or 1B, like he should be. Where I struggle with him is he the type of quarterback that is going to elevate, and I don't want to say inferior talent, but not the same talent he had around him last year. Okay, they may be better, right? That's what they pay these coaches to do. So is he that level of quarterback that with a unknown at running back and an offensive line that I think looks different than last year, correct? You know, and some questions at wide receiver. Is he the kind of guy to make them better players? Or is he KJ Jefferson? I know KJ Jefferson was coming into, 23, like, as the guy, right?
Yeah.
Is he KJ Jefferson really good, but, if he doesn't have pieces around him.
He needs dudes.
Right? So that's what we're about to find out. Because KJ came in with, and I'm not saying that Lenoris is KJ. I'm just making the comparison of when KJ lost that group from 21, he didn't seem like the same quarterback. I'm curious, but I think, if I remember correctly, South Carolina changed offensive coordinators to fit more of what Lenoris
does.
That
is correct. They went from Dow Loggins, who goes back, I think he went to Appalachian State to take over, and they brought in, hilariously, Mike Shula, which got them a lot of heat. But I also point out that everywhere Shula's been a coordinator, it's worked. He might just be one of those kind of Cliff Kingsbury, your Peter Principle out at OC kind of guys. And on top of that, knows how to run a pro set with a mobile quarterback. Yeah. He's done it before. It's actually, to me, a better fit than Dow Loggins was. Dow Loggins was a tight end coach at Arkansas who had never been a coordinator. It was even I love Shane. I didn't understand that hire at the time. I look at this one and I go, I'm not saying it's going to work out. I am saying it fits the pieces of the puzzle you need to fill in.
If I remember correctly as well, since Shane has been there, this series has gone back and forth, right? So all the Kyle Field games have gone to A&M. All the games in South Carolina have gone to South Carolina.
Yep. Yep. So it is going to be interesting. Can they break the trend? Let's talk about the conference at large. David Nuno of TexAgs.com joining us here on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. I think that it is pretty much accepted at this point. There are two top teams, Texas and Georgia. Then there is a second tier. Correct me if I've got anybody too high, too low, or you just disagree with the tier foundation of the argument. Texas and Georgia fighting for the top. And then there's a handful of teams at that next level that I put Alabama on. Are they going to be able, Kalen DeBoer, to take a step forward? Got questions about Ty Simpson at quarterback. I think I put LSU under Brian Kelly. I think Brian Kelly's in a world of hurt if they don't get to probably 10-2 and at least a playoff threat this year. I look at Texas A&M and South Carolina. I kind of think these are two teams maybe slightly behind Bama and LSU, but trending upwards, whereas those two schools kind of feel like they're stalled. This conference, for a conference that has historically been the best conference in college football, even I will acknowledge that, it feels about as parity-filled as it's felt in a very long time.
I'm not even convinced about the top two teams, right?
Yeah.
I look at Georgia. Yeah, I think talent-wise, they should be the top two teams. Georgia's schedule is crazy, right? And there are questions at quarterback, and there are questions, as there are every year with Kirby Smart, of replacing talent that went to the NFL. Texas, I like Arch as a – take away the A&M goggles.
Yeah.
I think Arch is a very likable person, right? What I've seen in interviews, seems like a good guy that loves football and waited his turn. That's a great story when you're that kind of hype. But I got my questions about him. You know, like, he hasn't played a lot.
Yeah.
And the teams he played against, Mississippi State and whoever else was the week before, like, okay. Yeah, he was cool in packages. I'd be interested to see how he handles – you know, defensive coordinators taking a look at him. So I have my questions about both of those teams. I still think they're 10-2, at worst 9-3, but probably 10-2-ish. And then you got that tier that you're talking about. Alabama, I think, is going to be better than people think. LSU, apparently the best team that Brian Kelly's ever had. Okay. I think that's an interesting series.
Yep.
A&M has had their way with LSU at home, but has lost every year. And I'm talking about since Brian Kelly's been there. But since 1994, A&M has not won Baton Rouge. So I think LSU is an interesting team. You lose your offensive line. Nuss showed us he could be the best quarterback in the SEC. Also showed us he could be one of the worst, right, when you put pressure on him. So I got my questions there. A&M, we know what the questions are, if they can stay healthy and can they get past the 8-4 moniker. South Carolina, I already detailed what I think about them. So, yeah, I agree with you from a parity standpoint. And I was actually pondering on the show today, could we have 2 9-3 teams in the SEC championship game this year?
It's, you know, I was talking about that a little bit yesterday. It's not crazy, especially with Texas and Georgia playing each other in season. There's an L there. Texas opening at Ohio State. There could be 10-2 before they even really hit the ground.
So could they lose at A&M A&M goes to there, or at Florida?
I mean,
those are all games, losable games in the SEC.
Yeah, and even put Florida in the mix, who under DJ Lagway probably should be too. So I think this is a fantastic year. Let me ask you one or two more, and we'll cut you loose. David Nuno from TexAgs.com. Yesterday, Greg Sankey said two things, one that kind of jumped out to me, one that jumped out to the general public. I'm sure it came up on your show as well. The first is, for the first time that I am aware of, Greg Sankey referred to the SEC as a super conference. And he almost kind of like made a joke out of it. At least on my show, in our market, the concept of super conference has kind of started to have a secondary, deeper meaning of eventually it's our show and we'll allow whoever wants to and can to participate somewhere. So I don't necessarily think that's Greg Sankey saying that's the destination, but for him to use that term when that's kind of what it's become, at least for me, accepted to be, I found that interesting. Am I being a drama queen about that, or is there something to that?
What is a super conference in your eyes? To me, they've always been a super conference.
Sure.
Right? And yeah, the additions of Texas and Oklahoma even strengthen that. But to me, in this era of super conference, it's when we get to two conferences, right? So, but they
are kind of there. The ACC's not good. The Big 12's trying to stay alive.
I think Clemson making a run this year.
I think Clemson can make a run. Miami, I don't believe in Mario Cristobal, but they've got the talent if Carson Beck's the guy. And then what? I mean, I don't believe Bill Belichick's going to do a damn thing at UNC. That's a personal thing. But it's a two-team conference right now because Florida State is absolutely cratered. I'm not saying Norvell can't bring them back, but
he's done it before.
He has. They're a long way from it. And then there's the Big 12, which, respectfully, the best thing that conference has got going for it is Deion Sanders. And I'm going to keep it a buck. I think Colorado without Travis Hunter and Shador this year is in a world of pain.
Sure. You don't believe in Arizona State?
I think Arizona State's fine, but, I mean, they ain't no Cam Scataboo out there. And that dude literally carried that team last year. They're good. But that guy was a difference maker to me.
If we consider a super conference to have a team that has a chance to win a national championship, or how many teams, then, you know, Clemson might be the only team in the other two conferences that I think has a legit chance. But it is the SEC. It is the Big Ten. And the Big Ten is top-heavy, and the SEC maybe hurts them a little bit. They're not top-heavy. They're loaded across. 1-14, maybe. Yeah, probably 1-14. I'm sure maybe 1-16. I mean, because – can 16 beat 4 at any point in the season? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Look at what Vandy did last year, and they weren't 16 last year by any stretch.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. All right, last one, and we'll cut you loose. All right, I'm going to cut it there, and we will come back and finish up our interview with David Nuno a little bit later in the show because asking you shall receive. I pointed out to him yesterday that respectfully and lovingly, as I do love David Nuno, I've known him for coming up on 20 years now, I think his school's a cult. And I told him that to his face. And I'll give you his answer later in the show. Here is what I will also tell you is coming up later on in the show. In the next hour of the show, Elijah Campbell of 107.5 The Game in Columbia, South Carolina is going to join us. We're going to talk some Gamecocks with him. I'll run you through some of the sound that we picked up from Media Days yesterday, and we'll get you prepped for the rest of SEC Media Days day number 3 coming up today. All of that coming up after Lonzo hands you maybe the most seductive 60 seconds of your day with this Sports Flash.
The National League claimed last night's All-Star Game in a home run derby swing-off. The NL led 6-0 at one point, but the AL tied it up in the ninth, leading to the tiebreaker, where players from each team got 3 swings and the homers were tallied. Philadelphia's Kyle Schwarber hit 3 in 3 pitches to give the NL a 4-3 win. Caitlin Clark was pulled from last night's 85-77 Fever win over the Sun with an apparent groin injury in the final minute of the game. Fever coach Stephanie White said Clark felt something in her groin and that she would be further evaluated today. Jets cornerback Sauce Gardner is now the highest-paid defensive back in NFL after signing a 4-year, $120.4 million deal just 24 hours after the Jets extended receiver Garrett Wilson. Gardner's contract includes $85.63 million guaranteed.